It's Tuesday, July 15th, 2008, and it's 4:20 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. All right, everybody, welcome to the Stash. Glad to have you here. You know, the summer festival season is just starting to kick off, and my first festival this year is happening this weekend. I'm going to go down south to Eugene, Oregon, home of the University of Oregon, Go Ducks, and the Emerald Empire Hemp Fest. So later on here in the show, we're going to be speaking with Dan Kuser, who is the executive director of the Emerald Empire Hemp Fest, to give you the lowdown on all the vendors, speakers, and music they'll be having for 3 days in the central Willamette Valley. So check that out. Also, we want to remind you that we're still having our Pass the Stash contest every day this week. Enter our raffle for the opportunity to win concert tickets to see 311 and Snoop Dogg in the Washington, D.C. area this Sunday. Stay tuned for the Pass the Stash information coming up later on in the show. Also, we're going to head out to Missouri and speak with Kelly Maddie from Joplin Normal. Kelly's just turned in a whole bunch of signatures to get a new initiative on the ballot in Joplin, Missouri, and we'll talk to him to see what he wants to do about the marijuana laws in that town. And we've got another one of our stupid stoner stories for you. Just be careful where you're dancing. You never know who might be watching. All right, everybody, roll up a blunt and get ready, because it's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Arizona school violated 13-year-old's rights in ibuprofen strip search. A divided U.S. appeals court has ruled an Arizona school violated the constitutional rights of a 13-year-old student by conducting a strip search for ibuprofen. Suspecting that a student had violated a policy against prescription or over-the-counter drugs without permission, public school officials in Safford, Arizona, ordered a search of Savannah Redding. A school nurse had her remove her clothes, including her bra, and shake her underwear to see if Ms. Redding was hiding anything. The 2003 search, prompted by a tip from another girl, did not find ibuprofen, which is found in common medications like Advil and Motrin to treat pain like cramps and headaches. Higher doses require a prescription. Previous court decisions ruled the school did not violate the U.S. Constitution's Fourth Amendment rights against unreasonable searches and seizures because officials have a legitimate interest in protecting students from prescription drugs. The 6-5 ruling by a panel of the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals on Friday overturned an earlier decision, setting out its reasoning in an extensive 75-page ruling with many details on the complications of eighth-grade life. Justice Kim McLean Wardlaw wrote for the majority, quote, "Directing a 13-year-old girl to remove her clothes, partially revealing her breasts and pelvic area for allegedly possessing ibuprofen, an infraction that poses an immediate danger to no one, and which could be handled by keeping her in the principal's office until a parent arrived or simply sending her home, was excessively intrusive," end quote. The majority found flaws in the school's logic that a tip from another student justified the action. Quote, "The self-serving statement of a cornered teenager facing significant punishment does not meet the heavy burden necessary to justify a search, accurately described by the Seventh Circuit as demeaning, dehumanizing, undignified, humiliating, terrifying, unpleasant, and embarrassing. And all this to find prescription-strength ibuprofen pills. No legal decision cited to us, or that we could find, permitted a strip search to discover substances regularly available over the counter at any convenience store throughout the United States." End quote. A 6-5 decision. This poor 13-year-old girl was one judge away from having to fight this all the way to the Supreme Court. You know, when people confront me about my drug war activism, they often ask if I hadn't thought of better causes, you know, climate change, voting machines, poverty, AIDS, whatever, to put my efforts into. Then I show them cases like this, where the demonization of drugs has led to such alarmist conditioning among school faculty and frightened parents that people actually think it is a reasonable thing to strip search an adolescent girl on the mere accusation from another student all over a legal drug. New Jersey transit cop faces marijuana charges. A New Jersey transit police sergeant was arrested last week after authorities found 4 pounds of marijuana in the backseat of his vehicle in Newark, according to a state police spokesman. Sergeant Barrington Williams, age 46, was off duty when he was apprehended about 11 p.m. Thursday night at Ivy and Bayard Streets near the Irvington border, State Police Captain Al Delafave said. The arrest followed an ongoing investigation, he said. Troopers with the State Police's Street Gang North Unit smelled marijuana coming from Williams' vehicle and observed 3 plastic bags of the drug in his 1992 Honda Accord, according to Delafave. Williams was charged with possession of a controlled dangerous substance with intent to distribute, illegal possession of a handgun because he had his service revolver with him during the incident, and official misconduct, Delafave said. He was jailed before being released on $50,000 bail with a 10% cash option. Penny Bassett Hackett, a New Jersey Transit spokeswoman, said Williams has been suspended without pay from his $87,000 a year post. She said he is a 13-year-old department veteran assigned to the region that includes Hoboken, Jersey City, and Secaucus. Now, of course, I don't think anyone should be going to jail for marijuana, not even a crooked cop. What I wonder, though, is with an $87,000 a year job, what sort of financial incentive did he have for trafficking weed? And I've always wondered in these cases how many cannabis consumers' lives he's wrecked in his 13 years of enforcing marijuana prohibition. Prohibition corrupts police. It did back in the 20s and 30s, and it does so today. From the lowly New Jersey transit cop all the way up to the military and governments of Colombia and Mexico. When half the people believe that a law isn't just, it's time to change that law.
Now it's time to play Pass the Stash, where you can win cool prizes from Normal.
And Snoop Dogg are hitting the road together for Unity Tour 2008. The tour will begin June 24th in Phoenix and run through August 3rd in Austin. Special guest Fiction Plane will open the shows. You could win a pair of tickets in our raffle for the show this Sunday, July 20th, at the Nissan Pavilion in Bristow, Virginia, which is in the Washington, D.C. area, with only a $4.20 donation to Normal. 311 Summer Unity Tour has become an annual event for music fans across the country. With their dynamic and celebratory live shows, 311 have cultivated a grassroots touring fan base that is thriving now more than ever. Blending rock, reggae, hip-hop, and funk, 311 have released 8 studio albums, a live album, and 3 DVDs, selling over 8 million units in the U.S. and establishing themselves as a core modern rock artist. And of course, Snoop Dogg is fresh off the release of his new album, Ego Trippin'. With his legendary rap flow and diverse appeal, Snoop has released 9 solo studio albums and has sold 30 million records worldwide. Snoop will undoubtedly add a party vibe to the shows. From Doggy Style to Ego Trippin', the Big Boss will be bringing all his hits and classic cuts.
Top dog, bite them all, yeah, I'm burning it up. DPG, see, you should be turning it up. CBT, LBC, yeah, we hooking back up. And when they bang this in the club, baby, you got to get up.
Now, the raffle does have some rules and regulations you have to follow. First of all, the raffle will be taking place from July 14th, Monday, through July 18th, Friday of 2008. You must be 18 or over to enter. The prizes are 5 pairs of tickets, with 1 pair given away daily. The approximate value of the daily prize is $100, and 1 entry constitutes a $4.20 donation. Unlimited entries may be made with matching $4.20 donations. In other words, you can enter more than once. Entries must be submitted daily by 4:15 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in order to be considered for the 4:20 p.m. Eastern Standard Time drawing. Winners will be contacted via email and or phone the next business day for age verification and instructions on where to pick up tickets. Failure to provide age verification will forfeit your prize. Questions can be directed to Normal at carlos@normal.org or by calling 202-483-5500. Get up on our blog, stash.normal.org, and check the 311 Snoop Dogg widget on the right side of the webpage. Click there and you can make your donation to enter the raffle for 311 Snoop Dogg tickets this Sunday at the Nissan Pavilion in Bristow, Virginia.
Really weird couple of experiences yesterday. First of all, I met a new technician at the TV studio where I broadcast my Oregon Normal cable access show, and I'd introduced myself as Russ, and he said, "Russ?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Radical Russ?" And I said, "Yeah." And then he starts talking about how much he listens to my radio show and loves the show and how I handled a caller and so on and so on. And then my wife, when I come home, she tells me how she was talking with a fellow student and she mentioned that I have this cable access show. And he says, "You mean Radical Russ? Oh my God, my roommates and I watch his show all the time. He's like a hero to us." And so now I may never again be able to buy a hat that fits. But hero? Dude, look, I'm just a guy who can't shut up in front of a computer, a microphone, or a camera when I'm 100% convinced that I'm right, the government is wrong, and the people are needlessly suffering. Anybody can be that kind of hero in one way or another. In that context, I'd like to recognize my hero of the day, Joe Boyette of Montgomery, Alabama. He's another First Amendment hero using his free speech to petition his government for a redress of grievances, namely that prohibition of marijuana is a wasteful fraud. The following is his letter to the editor that appeared in the Montgomery Advertiser. Chief Baylor said the Montgomery crime reduction team over the past year has seized about 40 pounds of marijuana. Nationwide, the war on drugs has spawned paramilitary police forces using automatic rifles, concussion grenades, armored personnel vehicles, and no-knock warrants to seize assets from nonviolent criminals under forfeiture laws that flagrantly violate the Fourth Amendment. All that to seize marijuana and put a few recreational pot smokers behind bars, costing taxpayers $30 to $50 a day. I have nothing but praise for Chief Baylor and his officers who are doing their jobs. I have nothing but disgust for a society nearly $10 trillion in debt, with violent crime threatening people in their homes, wasting scarce police resources on pot smokers enjoying themselves and harming no one. Don't forget that Slick Willie, W, and Obama admit having used marijuana. President Bush should surrender in our war on marijuana. He owes that to his fellow pot smokers who didn't have well-connected daddies to get their drug violations expunged from police records so they could be elected president. Joe Boyette, Montgomery, Alabama. Sometimes at the summer hemp festivals, people tell me they want to know how to become an activist. Well, a letter to the editor in your local paper is a tremendously easy way to start. The only way we lose the marijuana argument is by not talking about it. When your community sees in their own paper that there are locals who reject prohibition, they are more apt to reject it as well. Or you bring out the hateful armchair drug warrior responses, which are usually so over the top that they help us by undermining prohibition's credibility with the public. If you get your letter to the editor published, send me a link by email to stash@normal.org. I'll stay on the series of tubes, checking the Google, watching for all the activists out there telling the growing truth about cannabis.
Stupid Stoner Stories.
As a public service, Normal reminds you that smoking marijuana will not make one stupid. However, some stupid people do smoke marijuana. Don't be one of those stoners that make the rest of us look bad. Learn your lesson from today's
Stupid Stoner Story.
The city festival attracted the attention of authorities, was charged Monday with two drug-related misdemeanors, according to a criminal complaint. The man could face up to 7 months in jail if convicted of marijuana possession and possession of drug paraphernalia. According to the complaint, a security officer at Hispanic Fest on Saturday night pointed out the man to patrolling Sheboygan police officers after observing strange dancing that led him to believe the man was drunk or high. The man began to back away as officers approached him on the dance floor and twice reached for his right pocket. Police, who noted the man smelled strongly of marijuana, searched him and found 2.6 grams of marijuana, as well as a glass pipe and a marijuana cigar.
Okay, first I gotta know, how badly do you have to be dancing to stand out at the Hispanic Fest in Sheboygan, Wisconsin?
Hey, what's that vato loco doing? Ese, that's either the worst cabbage patch I've ever seen or the dude's having a seizure.
But seriously, we're talking about possibly locking up an 18-year-old for 7 months for bad dancing. Oh, well, yeah, and a couple grams of weed. You know, in a sane society, cops would have confiscated the weed and the pipe, written the guy tickets for public intoxication and underage possession, and warned him to leave the premises or be arrested for trespassing. I mean, that's what we would have done for the drunk dancer, isn't it?
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 12 states today, and THCF has medical clinics in 6 of those states. Our physicians help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help them obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, Colorado, Nevada, Hawaii, and California. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at www.hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Well, the Summer Hemp Fest season is kicking off this weekend for myself. I'm headed down to the beautiful Willamette Valley, Eugene, Oregon, to speak and table at the Emerald Empire Hemp Fest, which is taking place on the 18th, 19th, and 20th, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And joining us now by telephone from the Willamette Valley is the interim director of Willamette Valley Normal and executive director of the Emerald Empire Hemp Fest, Dan Kuser. Dan, welcome to the show.
Oh, yeah, thank you. I appreciate having the word to speak about one of our labors of love.
Oh, absolutely. We're all a labor of love here. Everybody, all volunteer. And tell the folks about the Emerald Empire Hemp Fest. How can they get to it? Where's it at?
You bet. The Emerald Empire Hemp Fest, we've been doing this since 2003. We started out, it's a free event, free to the public, much like Seattle Hemp Fest in a city park. And we have speakers and music. We have two stages. We started that in 2006. We added a second stage. And it also in 2006, we extended to 3 days. So now we start at 4:20 on Friday, the 18th. That's 4:20 till 10 o'clock at night. And then Sunday, high noon, and Saturday and Sunday, we start at high noon. And that goes until 10 Sunday and 8 on, I mean, excuse me, 10 on Saturday and 8 on Sunday. Yeah, we got a great music lineup, and just good vendors coming in, and it's just a great scene down here. And the big thing is, in 2004, we had trouble with the city. They didn't want us to have an event because it would be a, quote, danger to the public. Still don't have the letter. It's
kind of yes. Those crazy, out-of-control stoners, yeah. Right?
Yeah. So we went from that to, we met with them, and they said, well, we just need a, if you have a zero tolerance policy, we don't have an objection. So we've instituted a tolerance, we can't. Unfortunately, we have a hemp fest, now we can't use any herb on the site. But we have, we've been 3 years now, and we haven't had a single problem with the police. So we went from the city saying that we couldn't do an event to not only do we have an event, they don't even pay attention to us anymore. So
that's great. Now, that's I'm noticing on your website, the website for everyone out there is EmeraldEmpireHempFest.com, and you can get all the information you'll need there. And you've got a couple of great speakers showing up.
You bet. We've got Eddie Lepp coming back this year. He opened our show last year, and he's coming back. Great freedom fighter and activist. And Jack Ferrer's coming this year. So we just found out about that just the last few weeks. So unfortunately, we haven't been able to spread the word as much as we'd like to. And I had known that earlier. But yes, and then also Joseph Petrie, called himself the King of the Pal. Drug smuggler in several books, and another activist, he'll be there too.
Excellent, excellent. How about your music?
Can't forget Dave Sieber, our resident state hemp expert, will be there too.
Okay. And how about some of the musical acts?
Musical acts, we've got, one of the most I'm excited about is we have Henry Turner and Flavor from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. This is the third year in a row they've come all the way up here to play for us. Great band, great people. And then we've got some locals, the iShell Circle and the Circle of Light is a local group that has a good following and a very conscious group that likes to help out whenever they can. They played at many of our benefits for us. And, I don't have an entertainment guy here.
A whole bunch of them. We'll just check it out on the website.
Yeah. The main thing is we have a great dead show Saturday night starting at 7, so that's something new.
Excellent. Now, is it too late for people to get involved, volunteer, or donate anything to help you out?
No, not at all. We're, like any event, just going crazy and needing everything at the last minute. But you can go to the website, and our volunteer applications are there. Also, the vendor applications. Vendor fees, we cut them in half last year trying to get more participation. So it's only $100 for 3 days for a standard booth, which is very reasonable. And we also have the... we have an eBay account and also a PayPal. So if anybody would like to donate, the address is emeraldempirehempfest@hotmail.com. And same thing with eBay. We have an eBay account. If people have items that we can sell to raise money, we can do that too. So anything there we can help. We can help like that, help us out.
Well, that's excellent. Now, as far as Willamette Valley Normal goes, this isn't the only thing you're involved with as far as the Emerald Empire Hemp Fest. You've got a TV show, and what other types of things are you guys doing out there to help people?
We do the Eugene Cannabis TV, which is a half-hour public access local cable program. It's a half-hour show, and it's shown four times a week locally. We have a lot of fun with that. And we talk about hemp issues, and it's the whole hemp thing, and medical, industrial, and, of course, recreational. And then we have the Willamette Valley Normal. We've been in existence a little over a year, and Oregon Normal's coming down this year, so this is great. Well, we want to have a special normal area where we have all the normal chapters. We're hoping the third normal chapter in the state would come, but I haven't heard from them. I'd like to have them all together. You know, we have all the chapters together. It'd be great, but... Oregon Greenfield will be there, so we'll have a lot of nonprofits. Nonprofit booths are free, and they're not selling anything, so any nonprofits are certainly welcome to come, too. We encourage them to come. This is a community event.
That's right. And for your TV show, is there a way that people can view it if they're not in the local area? Is there a YouTube or something like that?
No, we haven't really got it on streaming video and such as what we should have invited. We just haven't had anybody to step forward and just do it. So, unfortunately, it's pretty much got to be local to be able to catch the show.
Well, then we're looking for a talented volunteer in the Eugene area. Get in touch with the folks at Willamette Valley Normal. Check out the Emerald Empire Hemp Fest website at emeraldempirehempfest.com. There's phone numbers and email addresses, and you guys get in touch. This is the way that we get these things changed, is everybody finds a talent that they have that they can donate to the cause, and we all work together to get it changed.
It's exactly. People ask me, what do you need? And I say, well, what can you do? Because we'll fit, find a place that you're comfortable and do what you like to do and help, and can help us. We'll work it out, it just all falls together. I've been doing this since 2003, and it's always amazing me how things just always seem to work out. We've had major problems, looks in almost panic time, and yet on the bottom line, they always work out. And that's why I know we're doing good and we're doing the right thing, because the karma, it all works out.
It all works out in the end. Dan Kuser is the executive director of the Emerald Empire Hemp Fest, also interim director of Willamette Valley Normal. Is there a website for Willamette Valley Normal people should know about?
You bet. That's willamettevalleynormal.org. We have the website up there, and our friend Perry Stripling does a great job keeping that site up and also posts upcoming events, so that's a great source to go to see what's coming up in the state of Oregon on the whole cannabis issue.
We'll have links to all those websites up at our blog at stash.normal.org. And, Dan, thanks for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash.
You bet. Well, I appreciate it, and we sure want everybody to come on down and show their support for a great cause. It's bottom line, let's face it, it's a freedom issue. So come on down and exercise your freedom.
That's right. And I'll be down there this weekend tabling with Oregon Normal and speaking on stage. So anybody Stash fans in the area want to come on down. I don't autograph body parts, but hey, whatever.
<That's>
we'll see
right.
you
and
down there.
For speakers. We have still room for speakers, and so if you know of a speaker or would like to speak, contact us. Again, emeraldempirehempfest@hotmail.com is our main email address. Phone number is 541-517-0957, and give us a call.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dan. See you this weekend.
You bet. Thanks, Russ.
Hi, this is Alan St. Pierre, the Executive Director of Normal. We are the oldest, largest, and best-known marijuana law reform organization in America, and it's all because of your support. Take some time to join Normal at www.normalnorml.org. Your membership supports this podcast, our websites, our policy research and analysis, and our annual conferences. Changing marijuana laws is a grassroots effort, and it starts with you, the stakeholder. Join Normal today and add your voice to the millions of cannabis consumers who demand equality with our beer-drinking friends.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. Today for our musical break, we get some campy, fun Europop with The Monkey Man and their hit, Get High. The band comes from Berlin, Germany, but the British influence is apparent beyond them singing in English. This is pop music just as it should be, easy to digest, fun to listen to, and the right beat to bounce your head back and forth. Like many artists today in our media and market-driven world, The Monkey Man found new fans and recognition when eBay used one of their tracks, Life is Wonderful, for their TV ads. Visit their MySpace page for more information and music from the Homo sapiens known as The Monkey Man. You can get that link at our blog at stash.normal.org, where you can also find more information about their album and get an MP3 download of this tune. It's Monkey Man with Get High.
There are 1 million reasons to stay. There are Hello, I'm Casper Leach, host of Time for Hemp. When our politicians passed the Marijuana Tax Act in 1937, the citizens of the United States had no idea that a new civil war had begun. Now, after more than 7 decades of this war's escalation and spending well over $1 trillion of taxpayers' money, the result has been an arrest record of more than 37 million brothers and sisters for nonviolent drug offenses. Every year, we choose to continue this war. We do so at the cost of well over $69 billion. Add to this, we are building prisons faster than we are building schools. In fact, the prison industry is now one of the fastest growing industries in the United States. We must end this civil war. We can with your help. Please, join LEAP, the Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and become part of the solution to ending the war on drugs. Go to leap.cc and find out how to become a member.
All right, in our long-standing battle here to overturn adult marijuana prohibition, a lot of people get a little frustrated because they look at the federal level and think, wow, there's no way we're ever going to get Congress to overturn this. Well, the key to this is getting involved at the local level and doing what you can at your state or even in your town. And to that end, we're going to be speaking now with Kelly Maddy, who's the executive director of Sensible Joplin and Joplin Normal, and is spearheading the campaign to help end adult marijuana prohibition in his town. Kelly, welcome to the Daily Audio Stash.
Thank you very much for having me, Russ.
Hey, let's tell our listeners what your petition is all about.
Essentially what our petition does is, in the city limits of Joplin, if passed by the voters in November 4th, 2008, it would effectively end all adult marijuana arrests for less than 35 grams in the city limits of Joplin and replace it with a fine-only system of $250.
And so no arrest and no criminal record?
Correct.
That's excellent. So you just recently were out collecting signatures for this, and we did a story last week about you turning in the signatures. How did that go?
It went pretty good, just like with any, I think, volunteer effort. We had some burnout there at the end. But we did turn in a nice chunk up and over of what we needed for the valid amount, which you usually have to do. So we hope to have a pretty good chance of landing a spot on the ballot.
What's the next step? It just has to be certified by the city clerk or something?
Right. She has 20 days to count the signatures to see if we had the verified magic number of 4,656. And if she does find those are sufficient, it would then go to the city council for consideration. But they have already indicated that they're going to push this to a vote because of such a supposedly controversial matter in the city of Joplin, and it'll be before the people in November at the presidential election.
Excellent. And so out of 4,100 some odd signatures there, how many did you turn in?
We turned in right around 6,300 rough signatures that were people living inside the city limits of Joplin but have not been verified as voters by us independently. And we need 4,656 out of those to turn up valid registered in the city limits of Joplin.
So if you got three out of four of those signatures were good, then you should be on the ballot this November.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds pretty good to me. Now, when you're out gathering...
We have a redemption period, too, at the end of the verification. If they are found insufficient, we have 10 days to collect more signatures. And then after that would be another five-day review by the city clerk. So we do have kind of a 10-day window where if we did fall short, we could collect more and hopefully gain ballot access.
Hmm. That's a pretty liberal policy. I like to hear that.
Yeah.
Now, Joplin, Missouri, about how big of a town are we talking about?
We have a daytime population, and that's because of the immediate towns that are kind of connected here to Joplin, of right around 150,000 to 200,000. However, residents, only 45,000, and out of that, only 32,000 registered voters.
Why the big difference in the populations there?
There's a close proximity of other towns, kind of Webb City, Carl Junction. It's more of a metro area.
Okay.
So
okay.
When people go to work during the day, the daytime population is a lot bigger than what the city of Joplin actually has as actual residents in the city limits.
Okay, and so the number of signatures you have to gather is based on that lower number of actual residents, then?
Correct. Yeah, it's based on the mayoral elections in April. How many people were registered at the time? We need 15% of that, which turns out to be our 4,656 signatures.
Now, what would you say is the general attitude of the average people there in Joplin? As you're going around getting these signatures, did you get a lot of people who were against this, you know, strongly, or were they very interested?
I would say it was about half and half. However, the ones that were against it were very vocal about it. I don't think they were really ever had to think about the issue. and when they're confronted with having to make a decision right on the spot whether to sign the initiative, even though it doesn't endorse it, it just puts it on the ballot, they can sometimes become kind of angry about it, especially if they haven't, you know, heard much information from the other side about the issue. So I would say, you know, versus, you know, running an initiative in Santa Monica, California, or on the East Coast somewhere, we'd have it a little bit tougher as far as, you know, the moral conservative feelings go here. So.
Yeah, and, you know, in the Midwest like that, too, you know, it can be really difficult. Like you're saying, the prevailing attitudes there in a more socially conservative area can make it really difficult. And you said this was a volunteer effort. How many people did you have involved in this effort?
Well, we had sporadically around, I'd say, 15 to 20 people, you know, that may have had a petition here and there, and they turned in 25 to 50 signatures. But the overwhelming majority of the signatures turned in was work done by about four or five volunteers that are closely connected to the chapter and worked hard on, you know, our events in the past and have came through again for us for this. So without them, none of this would have even been possible. So, you know, I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, it's amazing what a strong core of committed volunteers can get accomplished here.
Definitely.
Now, how could people get involved with Joplin Normal if they want to, or Sensible Joplin, if they want to help out with this campaign?
They can go to www.sensiblejoplin.org, and they could also call 417-291-0135, or they could visit the Joplin Normal website at www.joplin-normal.org, and we have MySpaces that are linked to on both of those main sites, and Facebook as well, so they can contact us on there. We have meetings twice a month on the first and third Mondays of every month. And we definitely will need help with informational canvassing as well as data entry and other kinds of volunteer efforts.
All right. So joplin-normal.org or sensiblejoplin.org. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. We'll have links to those up at our blog at stash.normal.org in case you don't have a chance to write those down or memorize them at this point. And when you came together to put this initiative together, did you model it after other initiatives in other cities around the country? Is this something you came up with brand new? Any attorneys help you out with this? How does this come together?
Well, the initiative language was directly adopted from the successful initiative that passed in Columbia, Missouri in 2004. All that was changed was, of course, the city ordinance references inside the text. And I've been working closely with Dan Veit, a National Normal board member out of Columbia, Missouri, who's kind of been, you know, my guidance for this whole legislative part of the initiative. And I also, you know, some legal issues along the way, he's been real helpful. So it was, you know, pretty much modeled off that. The campaign model has been a little bit more of a grassroots effort than the Columbia one. We've had recent initiative changes in Joplin that prohibits us from using canvassing firms.
Mm.
So it was all volunteer and formulated off that, you know, that model of having to collect all these by ourselves. And we were pretty successful in it. Registered over 900 voters here in the city of Joplin during the course of the campaign. So we have a lot to be proud of, even if we don't make the ballot in 2008, that we've been able to involve youth and local politics and get them familiar with the initiative process here in Joplin, and also got quite a few people registered to vote. So.
Yeah, that's what it takes, too, is just getting people educated and motivated to get marijuana regulated. That's what's one of our sayings out here.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, this is a really good effort to see taking root in Missouri. Like you said, Columbia has done something like this, now Joplin. And for those people that are living in the more conservative areas, you look toward places like Seattle and Los Angeles and Portland, or even on the East Coast like Boston, where they've passed a lot of these types of measures at the municipal level. But now we're seeing places like Missoula, Montana and Joplin, Missouri that are taking this on. So this, I think, is a very encouraging sign for those people anywhere across the country to know that if they just put their heads together and get a few committed volunteers, they can make this happen.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Just like, you know, Keith Jobs has been saying forever, once we reach the tipping point and we see these things start going geographically inland and toward these more rural areas, I think it's becoming more promising and promising every day for reform. So.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for the work you do. This has been Kelly Maddy, who is the executive director of Sensible Joplin and the Joplin, Missouri chapter of Normal. Check out their websites. We'll have links to them up at the Stash blog. And Kelly, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another one of our cannabis quotes, this one from the UK Royal Commission, also known as the Wooten Report from 1968. Quote, "Having reviewed all the material available to us, we find ourselves in agreement with the conclusion reached by the Indian Hemp Drugs Commission and the New York Mayor's Committee that the long-term consumption of cannabis in moderate doses has no harmful effects. The long-asserted dangers of cannabis are exaggerated, and the related law is socially damaging, if not unworkable." End quote. Every major report that's come out since the 1800s, commissioned by any government, federal, state, or local, have all come to the same conclusion, that prohibition of marijuana causes more problems than marijuana itself. It's just that simple. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash. We'll be back tomorrow for Hump Day. And until that time, take care of yourselves, tokers.